Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Welcome to this week's episode of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Today is Monday, September 4th. I am your host, Mike Rocky. I'm joined by my two co-hosts today, Robert Vallejos. Robert, are you there?
I'm here, ready to get into all the good stuff we've got to talk about this week.
All right, looking forward to it. And Matt Peterson, welcome to the show, Matt.
Glad to be here. I'm even more excited than Robert.
Good to hear. All right.
Impossible.
So we'd like for all of you to be part of today's show as well. So if you have a question or a comment for us, the phone number to call is 515-605-9345. Again, the phone number is 515-605-9345. If you don't want to, and if you do want to be part of the show, make sure to press 1. This way we'll know that you want to come on the show and ask your question. If you can't call into the show but still want to get your question over to us, you can email the show. The email address to use is mmalivecast@gmail.com. Again, it's mmalivecast@gmail.com. All right, guys, let's get started with this past weekend's UFC Fight Night 115 card. We'll kind of just go by, we'll go fight by fight, starting with the main event. We had Alexander Volkov finishing off Stefan Struve by TKO in the third round. I thought both guys landed some really heavy shots throughout the fight. It definitely looked like Struve was starting to gas out towards, I would say, probably halfway through the second round. I noticed him starting to really slow down. But even then, Volkov was really eating some big shots. But kudos to him. He just kept moving forward and finally caught Struve with the knockout shot. I don't know if you guys wait around till after the fight to hear his post-fight comments. But obviously, he's clearly disappointed in his performance. He said he's going to take a break for a little while, which is understandable. You know, after a fight like that, I can you can understand how disappointed he is. But it just seemed like he was kind of at a crossroads. Almost sounded like he was considering possibly retirement. After he said he needed to take some time off. But I was just curious. I'm actually curious to see what his next move will be, if he gets back in the cage, or if he does take an extended absence from the cage. Robert, let's start with you. What did you think of the main event?
Oh yeah, I thought it was a fairly entertaining fight. I mean, it's jarring to think that those are two heavyweights out there just because they weren't fat guys, and so it's kind of a different thing with these two guys with really long arms. It just your brain doesn't compute it that it's heavyweights. I was entertained by the fight. I was really worried that the eye pokes were going to play a much bigger part in the outcome of the fight. I'm glad that they didn't. That's something that the UFC needs to get addressed with their equipment. And, Dan Hardy talked about that on the broadcast. As far as where Stefan Struve goes from here, I think from the UFC's perspective, he's a guy that they would like to have around. He has never really won the big fight at the right time, but his resume is really good. And so he's a guy that if a prospect knocks off, it's a decent win to have. And I think there's always going to be a novelty with him. But like you said, man, it looks like he's getting to the end of the rope where he realizes he has reached his ceiling and he's not going to go on from there.
Yeah, I got that feeling as well. And you can almost just see it in, you know, in his face and, you know, his demeanor. You know, I think he just, you know, like you said, he just, I guess, realized that this might be, you know, where my plateau is. And that's got to be a difficult thing for a fighter to realize that. Matt, what did you think of the fight?
Yeah, I thought it was a fairly entertaining fight as far as heavyweight goes. I'm constantly amazed someone with Shrew's reach is just getting knocked out, seems more often than not. He can't keep guys at range. You know, he's had some huge knockouts against him, you know, Mark Hunt, Alistair Overeem. He's not 30 yet, but he's taken a lot of damage. He had the heart issue that kept him out for a while. So I could definitely see where his mindset's at as far as, you know, maybe taking a break or even calling it quits.
Well, let's say he does come back. Either way, you know, he takes a little bit of a leave, but, you know, ends up coming back, which usually happens a lot with fighters. You know, is he could go up against another top 10, maybe top 15 guy? What do you think the UFC does with him as far as matchmaking, Matt?
You know, he's still a top 10, maybe top 15 heavyweight fighter. There's some guys in that, you know, the top 15, that, you know, that 15 to 10 spot he could fight against. You know, Andre Arlovsky is still out there. Travis Brown is still out there. He could definitely do that. I don't see him beating, you know, anyone else in that top 10, really.
Yeah, I don't see him having much success with anyone in the top 10. Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm along the same lines as you guys. Like I said earlier, I think he's a good guy to put against prospects because that's a fairly decent win that they can use somebody to boost up to the top. Heavyweight just kind of is a wasteland like we've always known it's been. You know, it's just the depth is so shallow that a guy like Struve, like you said, he's a top 10 fighter, and he probably really shouldn't be, but that just kind of speaks to the state of the heavyweight division.
Yeah, it was pretty jarring because I was covering the fight live for the site. But when both those guys went to the center of the cage, it was jarring just to see just how big they were. They were just huge. I don't know if did that catch you guys by surprise?
It really did. And what was really weird about it, I thought, was that I didn't. Whenever you see, like, when Struve fought Mark Hunt, it looked kind of like a freak show. It didn't. Something about it was off with two long guys fighting each other. Height is not something I think we generally look at in MMA the way we do in other sports. And
right.
And like Matt was saying, Struve hasn't exactly used that height to his advantage in his career. So it's something that's really been offset. Like, I don't know how Volkov can use that in the future when he's going against these guys who will be much shorter than Struve, but it seems will hit a lot harder.
Yeah, speaking of Volkov, a big win for him, obviously. I think that his next fight will probably be against someone in the top five. Matt, let's start with you. Where do you think Volkov goes from here?
Yeah, it's great to see a heavyweight coming in who's not even 30 yet. It's nice to see a younger heavyweight, especially. He's got some movement issues. He's kind of wooden as far as the head movement and the footwork. But I could definitely see, you know, Mark Hunt's got a fight coming up, I think, down in Australia again. If Mark Hunt wins, I could definitely put him up against Hunt. I believe Derek Lewis has a fight coming up against Luis Fabrizio Verdum. You could put Volkov against the winner of that one for sure.
Yeah, Robert, what are your thoughts?
I'm along similar lines. I think Derek Lewis is always the answer when we book a heavyweight of over. We want to see them against next. I feel like the default is always, well, we'll be entertained by Derek Lewis. But in this case, I think Derek Lewis isn't at that top level, and obviously Volkov isn't there yet either. So actually, it's a fight that makes sense for more than just our entertainment. So that's where I'd like to see him go next. See if he can get that fight, and then see what happens at the top. You know, you never know when that path can kind of clear.
Yeah, Matt, and kind of going back to your point, as far as Volkov's style, you know, he looks like he's just a stationary target, just moving forward, you know, like you said, no head movement. And the fact that Struve couldn't take advantage of that with his reach, I was really surprised. So really kind of disappointed. I thought Struve was going to win the fight prior to going into the fight. What did you guys think, Robert? Who did you think was going to win?
I've been kind of down on Struve, so I kind of thought Volkov was more of the surging fighter in this case. I feel like we don't know enough about Volkov yet to really handicap where he's going to be in the future. So that's why this was difficult to pick. I would have probably picked Volkov, but it made sense that Struve might have been the favorite going in. I'm not sure exactly what the odds stated.
It was really close. I believe it was Volkov was minus 130, I want to say, or 125. So very real close to a pick 'em. Matt, did you have were you thinking it was going to go one way or the other?
Yeah, I've always liked Volkov. I think Bellator letting him go was a huge loss for them. And especially when you look at Struve, he's lost, he lost to Mark Hunt, a fighter I thought he should have, outstruck, especially out-grappled. And even going back to the Pat Barry fight, Pat Barry was out-striking Stefan Struve until it went to the ground, which says a lot about Struve and how he can't utilize his reach to his advantage.
Yeah, right. Right. So moving along, in the co-main event, we had Sayer Bahadurzadeh beating Rob Wilkinson by TKO in the second round. During that whole fight, to me at least, it seemed like it was just a matter of time before Sayer got Wilkinson's timing down and finished the fight, and it kind of ended the way I thought it would. Wilkinson had success taking Sayer down early, but I was surprised he just couldn't keep him down. And then once I saw how easy it was for Sayer to work his way back to the feet, right then and there, I knew Wilkinson couldn't stand and trade with him. So I wasn't surprised by the finish. Matt, let's start with you. What did you think of his performance in the fight?
Yeah, I was interested to see how Sayer looked coming back at middleweight, especially I figured with his time off, he's probably had some extra weight on. It's easier to make 185. He's always been a killer. Wilkinson had his moments early on in the fight, but I think once Sayer found his rhythm, I mean, it was going to be him no matter what, especially getting into that second round. And, as soon as he caught him, that was it.
Yeah, Robert, what did you think?
I just thought it was such a mismatch on the feet where it looked like, right away you could tell who the experienced fighter was and who was the guy who had the silhouette on UFC.com. It wasn't hard to see why that was the case once the fight started.
Yeah, for sure. But were you surprised by Wilkinson having his success with the takedowns? I was a little surprised. But then, like I said, once Sayer, got to his feet within seconds of being taken down, I knew it was just a matter of time before he caught him. But I was a little surprised he was having success early with takedowns. Did that surprise you at all, Robert?
A little. I don't know enough about Wilkinson to really say, what he did well. But the takedowns were so inconsequential that it really didn't stick out to me one way or the other.
Yeah. Matt, any surprises there?
Not really. The little reading I did about Wilkinson, I've heard he's a very good grappler, but Sayer just has so much experience. Yeah, the takedowns were inconsequential at best. They were trying to gain points,
right?
And it didn't shock me.
Yeah, if Wilkinson was going to win the fight, it was going to be by outpointing Sayer, which unfortunately for him didn't happen. So moving along, we had Myriam Renau beating Talita Bernardo by TKO. 4:54 of the final round. That was a much tougher fight for Renau than I expected it to be. I mean, kudos to Bernardo for taking the fight on such short notice, and she really represented herself quite well, I thought. She had really good grappling, but again, kind of like the fight prior, she really lacked the skills to stand and trade with Renau. And that was the big difference of the fight. Robert, did you see it the same way? Let's start with you.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be over very quickly. But every time they'd go to the ground, Bernardo would do just enough to frustrate Renau, and Renau couldn't, put her away on the ground. So you thought maybe she had the chance to hold out. And that was a late stoppage, too. I'm pretty sure if it went to the cards, Renaud would have won either way. But Bernardo, I don't know about her skill level, but her toughness level is definitely up there.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I was really impressed. Matt, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely a lot, I'll say, competitive. It went longer than I thought it would, and that's the danger, you know, when you're a fighter and you take on an opponent coming in on a day's notice. You have no time to, you know, look at some footage and even get much of a game plan down. You're kind of going by the seat of your pants for the most part.
Right, right. So for Renaud, what do you think this it means for her going forward? Matt, we'll stick with you here.
Well, you know, women's bantamweight, it's not a deep division. I mean, she won a fight. I mean, she could fight anyone at this point. I mean, kind of mix and match, I guess. It's hard to pick her, you know, pick someone down to put against her next.
Yeah, she even mentioned, too, in her post-fight comments that, you know, she's 40 years old and, you know, she's not getting any younger. So if it's going to happen, it needs to happen soon. Robert, where do you think they go with her?
You know, it's hard to say. I like the initial fight that was booked for this card with her and Durandamy. I know, like, we all hate Durandamy nowadays, but she's still a very good striker, and I think the fight would have been very good. I don't know if the UFC's ever going to book her again, to be honest. Durandamy, that is. So I don't know where she goes in that lower half of the top 10. I don't think this performance did not garner her, you know, a top 5 fight. So she might be stuck in limbo for a little while.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. But yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing the original fight. I think that's a fight they still can make, too. I didn't have a strong feel one way or the other. I guess I would probably favor Durandamy a little bit. Matt, what do you think?
Well, I'll start off by saying I don't hate Durandamy. I'm just very disappointed. I would like to see that match, at least just to watch the striking. They're both experienced strikers, and I'm sure both are getting close to the ends of their career, it seems, at this point, so why not make it? Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think that would be a good fight, too. So, and then in the main card opener, we had Leon Edwards beating Brian Barberina by unanimous decision. I thought this was a good opener. I thought both guys fought hard. Edwards landed some big takedowns throughout the fight, which I think was the difference in the fight. Barberina had success when the fight was on the feet, but unfortunately he just didn't have any answers for Edwards' takedowns. Robert, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on the main card opener here?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this fight. I thought it was a good way to get everything started. You know, Barberina really only had his moment in the second round where it looked like he could have put him away. But then after that, it was pretty academic. I was shocked, though, how well Edwards came back in the third round. I didn't think, you know, I thought he would be a little devastated from everything that was going on in the second. So I was very impressed with the way he really came back in the third and looked solid.
Yeah. Matt, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was a little shocked. I like Barberina. I think he's a good guy. I think he's got – if fights didn't have time limits, he'd win everything. He's got cardio for days. But I was a little shocked, and I was impressed at how Edwards came back in that third round and really punched it up. And I think he's probably got a pretty bright future ahead of him.
Yeah, I think he does too. And with Barberina, there just never seems to be any sense of urgency from him, which I think it costs him, you know, more times than not. You guys agree or disagree with that? Matt, I'll start with you.
Oh yeah, definitely. And there's a lot of times, you know, he could, if he just punched his pace up just a hair, I think it would make a world of difference for him. But he just seems to be stuck at that one gear level. And he just can't flip it to the next one.
Yeah, exactly. Robert, did you notice that as well?
I haven't noticed that as much, but, it, you know, it's one of those things like, if you want to overcome that, dude, get into main events. That seems like that would actually help him. Right. That way, he can, like you say, he got that cardio for days, then maybe he can actually showcase that, but he's not on that track just yet.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's take our first break here, and then when we come back, we will look ahead to this coming weekend's UFC 215 card.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too, and if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, guys, let's take a look at this coming Saturday's UFC 215 card. Let's just start with the main event. We'll kind of each give our thoughts and an early prediction as far as who's going to win each of these fights. So starting with the main event, we have Demetrius Johnson going up against Ray Borg. Right now, last time I looked, Johnson was a huge favorite. I believe he was minus 900. So clearly Vegas isn't giving Ray Borg much of a chance here. Personally, I like Ray Borg. I think he's a really good fighter. Obviously, you know, he's not going to be at Johnson's level, and no one really is at this point. I see Johnson winning the fight, but I think Borg is going to be around for a while, and this isn't going to be his last championship fight. Robert, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on this fight?
Yeah, I see this very easily for Johnson. Look, and like you said, Borg has a bright future. I kind of had him, like, about 6 months ago, I had him penciled in as maybe one of the guys that would face Mighty Mouse in like 3 years, maybe, when Mighty Mouse might have been on the decline and he could have been like the Chris Weidman to his Anderson Silva. Obviously, that's not going to happen. Everything kind of got accelerated. So I think, like you said, look, this is MMA. We've been dealing with boxing people for the last month. One loss in a championship fight doesn't define you as an MMA fighter. So I think he'll be just fine, but I don't see it going too well for him on Saturday.
Yeah, I think he can use this as a learning experience too. Matt, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, normally I'd say, you know, everyone's got a chance. You guys are crazy for counting him out already. It's true. Borg, he's going to be around for a while. He, you know, Johnson's cleaned this division out, and Borg's the only one left who hasn't fought Johnson. So I see Borg hanging in there. He's a tough guy. I'm thinking a late finish for Johnson, probably the fourth, fifth round submission more than likely.
Robert, do you see it going the distance, or do you see Johnson inside the distance?
Inside. Mighty Mouse is finishing fights lately, and it's something he didn't do for a while, but recently he seems to have a little bit more urgency to his fighting, so I think he's going to finish him off.
Yeah, I see a late finish, like you guys see it as well. So in the co-main event, we have Amanda Nunes going up against Valentina Shevchenko. Obviously, this is the fight that we're finally going to get that we're supposed to get a few months ago. The first time the fight was booked, I had Shevchenko winning. When I did my preview for the site, I picked Shevchenko, and I think I'm going to stick with that pick. I think just like in the Johnson-Borg fight, I see her getting a late round stoppage. Robert, let's start with you. Where do you see this fight going?
I actually see an early finish for Amanda Nunes.
Really?
I think for some reason, yeah, I think that the UFC propaganda machine has worked in undermining what Nunes has done recently. I think we've sort of forget that she just, you know, KO'd Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey in like the first round in this past calendar year. So I actually see it. I see that happening again. I watched their first fight earlier today just as a form of research. And I know everyone says Nunes was gassing at the end, which was happening. But Nunes looks so good early on. Now, this is a five-round fight. If it goes to the championship rounds, I do like Shevchenko. But I'm gonna pick Nunes to finish it early.
So you have Nunes early. But if the fight goes into the fourth, fifth round, Nunes is in trouble, correct?
Yeah, that's what you call hedging your bet.
Yeah. Matt, what do you think?
I'm not bold enough to call an early finish for Nunes. I'm definitely saying a later round finish for Nunes. I'm thinking probably the fourth round, but a very, very, very close fight. I really like this fight. Both ladies are right up there at the top of the division. And, I can see it going the other way, but I'm rooting for Nunes.
So you have Nunes in a late round stoppage.
Yeah, I'm gonna call it round four.
Wow, so going against the grain there. All right. Moving along, we have Neil Magny taking on Rafael Dos Anjos. Matt, let's start with you on this one.
I'm going to go with Magny on this one. And the reason I'm thinking so is Magny's gotten good at using his range. He's got lanky arms and legs. He's got very good wrestling, and he's a big welterweight. And Rafael Dos Anjos is moving up. So I'm going to call us for Magny. I'm thinking probably a split decision Magny, but I think Magny's really going to use his grappling to his advantage.
Interesting. Yeah, and Robert, what do you think?
I'm going to go with Magny as well. I think he'll get a I'll go decision Magny. I don't think RDA, he's not what he once was, and I think we're starting to come to terms with that. I know moving weight classes was different, but after that loss to Tony Ferguson, I just think something different about him. He had his shot at McGregor, and once that slipped out of his hands, I just don't think he's been the same fighter.
Yeah, I feel the same way you do, Robert, as far as Dos Anjos goes. I think Magny wins this fight. I think it does go to a decision, but I see him taking probably a unanimous decision here. But yeah, I mean, I picked against Dos Anjos' last fight, which I was wrong on. But, you know, like Matt said, you know, Magny's a bigger guy. He's lanky. And I think he's just going to be too much for Dos Anjos. So moving along here, we have Latifi taking on Tyson Pedro. I didn't get a chance to really look at this fight. Matt, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I don't know enough about Tyson Pedro to really dig into what his style is and where he's at. I've always liked Latifi. The only problems he's really come up against that really high-ranked light heavyweights. He's got good wrestling. He's got big knockout power if he can catch you. So I'll go Latifi. I'm thinking probably first-round knockout.
Yeah, I like Latifi in this fight, too. I worry a little bit, though, if it starts going into the late second, into the third round. Don't know much about Pedro as far as his gas tank, but I'm thinking it's probably going to be better than Latifi's. So if it gets late in the fight, kind of like that co-main event, I might switch over to Pedro if the later the fight goes. Robert, what are your thoughts?
I'm going Latifi, but without any strong, leanings one way or the other, just from the sake of information on Pedro is so slim compared to the two. So I'm going to go Latifi, but that's not something I would put any money on.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that one. And then finally, we have Jeremy Stephens going up against Gilbert Melendez. This is one of the fights, obviously the main event, the co-main event, I'm looking forward to. But this is a fight I'm probably looking forward to just as much as the other ones. Robert, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on this fight?
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I think Jeremy Stephens like the most overrated guy in the UFC week after week.
Wow.
It seems like he got his big knockouts like 10 years ago and people love the dude. With that, I'll pick Melendez. Look, how long has it been since Melendez has fought too? So it's hard to say what he is.
Right.
But I'm gonna take a flyer and go Melendez, but I might just be showing extreme bias here. I'm not sure.
Matt, how do you see this fight going?
I'm going to go with Stevens on this one. I'm offended that someone would think he's the most overrated fighter. But Melendez, his only win so far, his only win in the UFC so far is Diego Sanchez. This is his first move down to featherweight in the UFC. Stevens is coming off a couple losses. He had the big win against Henan Barao. That showed he can still hang, the whole fight, really push the pace if he has to, and I think this is Stevens' fight to lose.
Yeah, I don't really have a good feel for this fight either way. I'm going to go with Melendez, but I hold the right to switch my pick later in the week. So I got to apologize, guys. Let's go back to this past weekend's card. We didn't get a chance to touch on the prelims at all, so I don't know if there was anything that you guys wanted to touch on. I thought, Darren Till had a really good outing, probably the cockiest fighter in the UFC. I also thought, Taysumov, really another impressive win. He's moving up the ranks quickly. So I don't know if there's anything in the prelims here. Robert, I can start with you, that you wanted to touch on. If not, Matt, you can give us your thoughts.
I didn't watch the prelims yet, so I'll defer to you guys on that one.
All right. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. The two things that caught me in the prelims. One is, I'm going to pronounce this, Magomed Shapirov. I think I got that right. Debuting featherweight. I know he just came from Dagestan. He's training with Mark Henry now. Had a big win. Second round submission. Mark Henry apparently has claimed him as the best fighter ever trained, which is a big statement coming from Mark Henry, who's trained, Frankie Edgar, Eddie Alvarez, Edson Barboza. So that's really somebody I'm looking to watch. He's a lanky guy, but he's still a big featherweight. And he's a wild striker. He pulled some wild stuff. He pulled a cage jump kick. So that's something I think we should really keep our eye on. And my second point, and I brought this up to Mike before, Abdul Karim Edilov made his debut light heavyweight on the prelims. This is a guy I think the UFC really, really should have checked before they signed him. I don't know if anybody had read the articles on Bloody Elbow. This guy has deep ties to the president of Chechnya and some really dirty business going on behind the scenes there that's fairly open to the public. And this is definitely something I think the UFC should have taken into account before signing this guy. I don't know if you guys had the time to check that out at all.
Yeah, I didn't get it. Shame on me for not checking that article out. But, you bring up a good point. I'm just not quite sure how much background. I mean, they have to look into the fighters, right? They can't just bring someone in without doing any type of background check. So I don't know if that's something that's – I can't see how that would slip by him, or if it even was an issue for him, for the UFC to begin with. I can't, speak to that. Robert, I don't know if you had a chance to check out that column.
Yeah, well, I've been following the story in general with the, that dictator in Chechnya and the work that's being done there. It seems like, I don't know if the UFC knew what they were getting into then when they started kind of doing business with this guy. But they obviously do now. So going forward, they'd be better off treading lightly. And it's not just the UFC. You've had, Greg Jackson sending the dude a video tweet, telling him happy birthday or something like that. You've had guys like Weidman hanging out over there on behalf of the UFC. So I don't know, how much they knew in the past, but definitely because of all the reporting that's come out lately, they know now. So, now the accountability is squarely on the UFC's shoulder.
So are you surprised that they brought him in, obviously knowing his past?
No, because they seem to still be in business and they haven't taken a hardline stance, against using anyone that comes from that connection. So, and I don't know when he was booked, before everything really came to light. So, and I'm assuming they're going to think that a fighter that low profile would probably just slip under the radar.
Yeah, you're possibly right about that. Matt, do you see them shying away from fighters going forward? I mean, like Robert said, depending on when he was signed, when the fight was booked, it's kind of beyond past that point. But do you see them making this a bigger issue going forward?
It's definitely hard. I mean, this guy, Edilov, on the prelims Saturday, has very, very deep ties directly to the government there. Low-level guy, I could see them maybe just cutting him. He's at one fight. Low-level, they could cut him. But a lot of the fighters coming out of that Dagestan area are very good fighters. You have Khabib. You have Magomed Shapirov. They've all come out of that area. They're all very solid MMA fighters. The problem is, MMA is a huge industry there, and MMA itself in the area has ties to the government, to the dictator there. So it's hard to say, tell everyone they can't come fight when that's what they've done forever. It's hard to separate the sport and the politics.
Yeah, you're right. That is tough. So, all right, let's move on here. We're going to take our second break, and then when we come back, with Matt and Robert. We'll be right back.
support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
So real quick, guys, before we move on to our next topic, anything on the UFC 215 card as far as the prelims go that you guys wanted to discuss? Nope.
I would say one fight to watch is Henry Cejudo versus Wilson Hayes.
I was going to mention that fight as well.
Yeah, both guys coming off their title losses, but they're still very high-level guys with some high-level skills between them. I think that's going to be a really, really fun fight to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking forward to that fight. Anything from you, Robert?
That's the fight I was going to say. It's kind of weird because that's a really good fight, but we know there's almost no consequence to it because Mighty Mouse has already plowed through both guys. So it's a good fight that I feel like doesn't have any consequence to it. It's a weird deal in the flyweight division, the way Mighty Mouse has just laid waste to everyone.
Yeah, it's true. So, all right, moving along here. So ever since the Mayweather-McGregor boxing match, even when it first got started getting talked about, and then when it got booked, more and more MMA fighters figured that they can be boxers, and more boxers are thinking they can be MMA fighters. So the latest with this, dilemma is Andre Berto mentioning that he wants to come into the UFC and fight MMA, and then we had Jose Aldo stating he wants to be a boxer. So I don't know where you guys stand on this. Matt, I guess I'll start with you. Do you think this is just getting a little out of control, or do you think any of these guys have any valid validity to possibly competing in the other sport?
Yeah, these guys aren't looking at, really converting over to another sport. They're seeing the dollar signs. They don't realize the dollar signs came. The dollars were meant for two guys. That would be Floyd and Connor. And now they're gone. That was the moment. That was the flash in the pan. And these guys can't seem to realize that it's gone. That's what the fans wanted to see. If not Berto fighting in MMA and not Jose Aldo fighting in boxing.
Yeah, and I just don't see any boxer coming into the UFC, Bellator, I don't care what organization it is, and having any semblance of success whatsoever. Robert, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, look, people aren't paying to see Berto and Aldo in their respective sports right now, so I'm not sure how much people are going to pay to see them, those guys cross over. I like the idea of guys trying out a new thing. I don't think that we should be totally down on it. It doesn't make sense to go into the top organization in the world immediately if you're going to do that. I think, I'm pretty familiar with the career of someone like Holly Holm, who she started MMA fighting on the local scene here in Albuquerque. Even though she was very famous in her own right, she did kind of start from the bottom. Yes, she was fast-tracked to the top. So I'm not against it happening in principle, but there's not a demand for that sort of thing. There was a demand for Mayweather and McGregor because they were Mayweather and McGregor. And, a few years ago, Anderson Silva, there was always the talk about him doing boxing. That's interesting because he's a guy that was at the pinnacle of what he did. So then there was the time for a new challenge or a different challenge. These guys right now, they're riding the coattails of two supernovas that they can never be.
Yeah, and just like both you guys mentioned, the only reason this fight worked was because of the name value. And I think, Matt, you touched on it. These other guys are just seeing the amount of money that was made, but that is not even going to come close to that amount of money, regardless of, if there's another fight in boxing or in MMA. These guys aren't going to draw that type of money. So I think I don't know if that's what they're looking at, or maybe Aldo just feels like he feels he's done all he can in the UFC, and this might just be the next phase of his career. So maybe there's something to that, but if it's strictly a monetary issue, then yeah, I think they're sadly mistaken here. So with that, Matt, did you get a chance to check out last week's Ultimate Fighter premiere?
Yeah, yes, I did. I made sure to catch what I could, and I have to say, I'm really impressed with this season so far for one reason that stands above all, is that we're not going to have to watch two coaching teams bicker back and forth for how many weeks on end.
Yeah, you didn't enjoy the Dillashaw-Garbrandt bickering?
That whole season showed, and it could be editing, you know, everyone's been a victim of editing on that show, but no team, I don't think, has suffered publicly such a publicity loss as Team Alpha Male. Cody Garbrandt, Justin Buchholz looked like a bunch of crybabies every time they tried to go, you know, to verbal war with Dwayne Ludwig, who's a class act, and TJ Dillashaw.
Yeah, I was actually embarrassed for them at certain points in the season, because Garbrandt really doesn't have any quick wit. He doesn't have any quick comebacks. He automatically just gets mad and wants to fight. Where Dillashaw was coming back with, you know, quick one-liners, you know, real witty. But yeah, it just really made Garbrandt come off poorly, I thought, as well. But go ahead. Any further thoughts?
I'm excited. Like I said last week, both these guys, Eddie Alvarez and Justin Gaethje, have come from great teams. You know, Alvarez is training under Mark Henry, Ricardo Almeida. Gaethje has Trevor Whitman in his corner. I think these are teams, a lot of these ladies are really, really going to, you know, benefit from having this kind of training. I am a little leery of whoever wins this season. If you look at the records of these women fighting this season, they're good, but they're not great. So someone will win. I just don't have a lot of hope for the person who wins really holding on to that title, with women who are already in the UFC either going up in weight or coming down in weight and posing a real challenge.
Yeah. Robert, did you get a chance to watch it?
Yeah, actually, on Matt's recommendation, I sat down on Wednesday night and watched the show. I had to watch Ultimate Fighter in a really long time. I enjoyed the episode. I think the point of the, like Matt said, to get the coaches, but that stuff last season was just, it got old very quickly. I wish, you know, Dominic Cruz could have just been on there so he could have really put Team Alpha Male in their place like he always seems to do. But in general, it's good because Justin Gaethje's a guy that everybody's so excited about and everybody has his fight highlights, but being that he was in World Series of Fighting, I feel like we don't know a ton about him or his personality. So this is a great showcase for that. But like Matt said, I feel like the bantamweights and the strawweights that are already in the UFC are just circling the waters and waiting for the sacrificial lamb to come out so they can either, you know, pick up a title for the first time, or in the case of like Joni Violence, be a two-time champion very easily.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking as well. She'll be, you know, two-time champion. And like you said, I think that belt is going to change hands quite a bit. Because, yeah, I don't see whoever does come out of show, like Matt said, really having a long reign with the belt. So, but it should be interesting. I have yet to check the show out, but probably on Wednesday watch both of them. So be able to comment a little bit more on it for next week's show. So let's take a break one last time here, and then we do have an email question we'll get to, and then Robert, we will end with the Mae Young tournament on WWE Network.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
So I wanted to take this question. It came in email last week, but we were running a little bit long on time, so I didn't get to it, but I figured we just get to it today. This comes from Justin K. It's a little off topic here, but that's okay. He says, "Hey guys, love the show. Carlos Condit is my favorite MMA fighter. I haven't heard much that's going on with him lately. I know there was talk about him retiring. Have you guys heard anything? Thanks. Love the show. I haven't. Matt, I don't know if you have. I personally think he's leaning towards retirement. But like I said, I don't have any information on that either way. I don't know if what you've heard.
Yeah, actually, this is a question that sent me on an internet search out of the blue just this last week, because I'm also a huge Carlos Condit fan. I know after the loss to Damian Maia, it really, I'm sure, buckled him a little bit. I know he talked in the past about the amount of damage he was taking. He has a wife. He has a family. I know everything made it sound like he was leaning towards a retirement, but I couldn't find anything, you know, new up to date since the loss to Damian Maia. So if someone's keeping that low of a profile, I could definitely see him just kind of, you know, riding off into the sunset, and maybe we never hear about it. But I'll be waiting for news just like everybody else.
Yeah, Robert, anything on your end?
Yeah, well, actually, Condit's keeping a high local profile over here in Albuquerque. He actually just started, like, a coffee business. He was on the news, the local news, like, 2 weeks ago for it.
Really?
Plus, he's been appearing in, like, yeah, I don't know what the deal is. It's supposed to be some kind of, like, coffee that has, like, rejuvenative properties to it. That he's going to, yeah, the local news here did a big feature on him. Plus, he's been appearing in, like, these anti-child abuse PSAs that I'm assuming they only air over here. So he is definitely setting himself up for that post-career, you know, sort of pseudo-minor celebrity status. So I have no indication on if he's going to fight again. I would think if he was going full-on retirement, we might have heard something by now. But, yeah, he's definitely staying visible at least locally. So I think he's just about there, and he's, you know, he's doing stuff while he's still considered a UFC fighter to gain that profile and you know, live off of his fame. I will say one thing, he's another guy too that around here is very well liked, very well respected. You know, we have like Holly Holm, John Dodson, and Carlos Condit, Diego Sanchez, I'll throw in there. They're guys that locally we've known, you know, since way before they were in the UFC and have been celebrities a long time. So he's in that class that really could cash in without being a big, he's not going to be a Ronda Rousey where he's going to do these, all these other endeavors, but it looks like he's got stuff lined up for him in the very near future.
Yeah. He always struck me as a really bright guy. So that's good to hear that he's at least, you know, parlaying his popularity and moving on. It does sound like, now listening to what you said, it does sound like he is probably done with fighting, if I had to guess. Wouldn't you, Robert?
Yeah, if I even the things he was saying after the Robbie Lawler, after that fight, the things he was saying going into the Maia fight kind of leads me to think that he was just about done. He strikes me, like you said, as a bright guy and as a guy that wants to get out.
Yeah.
Before he really sustained some serious damage. Look, he's been through some wars in his career, so
oh, for sure.
It would not be a bad thing for him to call it a day.
Yeah, the Robbie Lawler fight alone probably took some years off of him. And I think, you know, like you mentioned, I think after that fight, I think that probably is the fight that really made him think, you know, long and hard about how much longer he wants to do this. And then getting finished by Maia was disappointing. So I'm sure that was Dingle's as planned, so there's probably a lot of disappointment there. I would like to see him come back maybe one more time, go out, you know, a little bit better than he did in the Maia fight. But, you know, if it is a time for him to call it a career, I mean, kudos to him, because he definitely deserves to, you know, have success going forward. Any last thoughts, Matt, before we move on?
Yeah, if he retires, I mean, you know, hats off to him. He's been around forever. He was the interim champ. He fought for the world title. I'll always be a little sad we never got to see him fight Chris Lytle or Matt Brown. Those are two fights I know everyone really wanted to see before they fell through. But, you know, if he calls it a career, we just, you know, we'll watch the replays and enjoy what he had.
Yeah, agreed. So, Robert, I know you mentioned you wanted to discuss the Mae Young Classic going on the WWE Network. So go ahead. The platform is yours.
Okay, so last week Matt recommended that we watch The Ultimate Fighter, which I took under advisement, and I'm glad that I did. Well, I'm going to see his Ultimate Fighter, and I'm going to raise him a Mae Young Classic this week. The Mae Young Classic, for those who don't know, it's an all-female pro wrestling tournament on the WWE Network. And you have women from really all around the world. A lot of some names that some people know, you know, MMA audience will be familiar with, someone like Shayna Baszler. And then there's some names of women that I have never heard of. I would just say, if you're an MMA fan who has a passing interest in pro wrestling, in WWE, but you're not much for all the gaga that goes along with wrestling, the lame acting or the over-the-top gimmicks and angles, this tournament is for you. It's nothing but straight-up wrestling. It's not as good as the Cruiserweight Classic that aired a year ago because, by definition, you have Cruiserweight wrestlers who are very small and very fast-paced. But this is something that it just captivates my attention. I think if more people were exposed to it, they would really enjoy it. They dump 4 episodes a week, which I don't like because you kind of have to watch them within that week or fall very far behind. So that is a very inconvenient. I wish they were dropping them a week at a time. But at the same time, if you have like a day free, you can knock them off in a week. And I know this week's episodes, I'm halfway through them. There's something with Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler where they get involved with some of the WWE talent. And I saw that picking up some headlines. So there are some MMA tie-ins. It's one of those things, like I said, if you've got the time, definitely check it out. It'll be time well spent.
Yeah, I did see the headlines confrontation as well. So, Matt, are you going to take him up on this recommendation?
You know, I am. I'm going to say it. I know who Mae Young is. I remember watching Mae Young when I was younger watching wrestling, and I remember wondering who this old woman was who is still a better athlete than I am. But
let me just jump in real quick. I promise you nobody will be giving birth to a hand during the Mae Young Classic.
Matt, when you were watching...
I'm going to take you up...
When you were watching, was it maybe 10, 12 years ago, you had said, was Mae Young still around? Was she still doing, she was still, wasn't she, Robert, 10, 12 years ago? She was still, I think, in the WWF at the time, right?
She was on TV infrequently to like the mid-2000s. So, yeah, in the Attitude Era, she was definitely, you know, on TV a lot.
Yeah, I thought so. So anyway, sorry, Matt. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, yeah, I remember Mae Young, and I remember the fabulous Moolah. And this is the information that stays in my brain over other information. I do remember those two, and I'm going to take you up on it. I'm going to watch some of it. You can count on me talking about it next time.
Yeah, I have some homework to do as well.
Are you going to tell me to watch some Invicta next week as we keep this battle going, Matt?
I'm gonna run out of TV time. It's gonna be my first problem.
Right, there's so much to watch as it is. Keep adding stuff. You just can't find the time. All right, guys. Any final thoughts before we wrap up? Robert, start with
you. You know what? This card this weekend, it doesn't have a bunch of names on paper, but I think it's going to be one of those sleeper cards of the year. There's a lot of good fights for hardcore MMA fans on this card. So if you're on the fence about it, I would definitely say buy this card this weekend.
Yeah, I don't see it doing well buy rate wise, but yeah, I think it's going to be a really good card. And Matt, anything to add?
Thing, you know, I hope everyone watches this card. The UFC has really thrown Amanda Nunes and Demetrius Johnson, you know, under the bus as far as publicity has gone. But Demetrius Johnson could break the title reign record this weekend. Nunes and Shevchenko are going to put on a crazy fight. If anyone's on the fence, just watch this card and watch the hell out of it.
And Robert, and if you want to go ahead and plug your Twitter and anything else that you have going on.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob N. Vallejos, RobMVallejos. I'll have a column going up later in the week on MMA Torch where I take every division in the UFC except for the women's featherweight division. I pick out one fighter who has never had a championship opportunity and sort of handicap their possibility as being a breakout star within the next year.
Yeah, I always look forward to your media and business columns. They're well written. And Matt.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Matt P, MATTPETE 1088. And I'm hoping Rob writes a column only about the UFC's featherweight division and the incredible depth it holds.
Right after I write that Jeremy Stevens, I love Jeremy Stevens. So I'll get on that.
You're owed to Jeremy Stevens. All right. You can follow me on Twitter at FightChampBlog. And you can read all my columns, as always, at MMATorch.com. So for Matt and for Robert, my name is Mike Rocky, and we will be back next week for another episode of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Dog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.